get something off my chest. The bandages on my face did not have anything to do with
anything. And it's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So now we can go. This happened to me 2 times. I don't know. There must be some psychological reason for this to happen.
I just hope you don't fall asleep.
Come home again, I'll tell you. Let's see. Do we have a quorum? I guess we do. I'll call the meeting to order. We should have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which would include the proposed agenda and the minutes of our March 15th meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Why don't we start introductions around the table again?
I'm John Saxhog. I'm a citizen member from Minneapolis.
I'm Bob Patton. I'm executive director.
I'm Dave Fredrickson, Commissioner of Agriculture.
I'm Eric Tomlinson. I'm a citizen member.
Brian Napstad, Bowser Chair.
Kate Knuth, citizen member from New Brighton.
John Stein, Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency.
Aggie Lighthizer, Assistant Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Health, here for Commissioner Ellinger.
Julie Gehring, citizen member from Moorhead.
Barb Narramore, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota DNR, here for Tom Landwehr.
Mike Rothman, Commissioner of Commerce.
Yeah, why don't we just do a quick spin around the room?
Jim Urkel, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
See you, Jim.
Bill Grant with the Minnesota Department of Commerce.
Jennifer Schabel, intern at the Governor's Office.
Suzanne Sabatka, legislative staff for Senator Matt Schmidt.
Chuck Malkinson, City Leaders.
Michelle Ross from the Department of Health.
Joe Henderson, State Mining Coordinator.
Randall Lillian, Natural Resources, EQB Tech Rep.
Travis Jermison, Board of Water and Soil Resources, staff.
Jason Elkow with the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Tim Bayrein, Department of Employment and Economic Development, Government Affairs, Commissioner Stephen Spencer Regrets.
Susan Heffron, Pollution Control Agency, Tech Rep.
Johanna Ruprecht, Land Stewardship Project.
Dennis Egan with the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council.
Hey, Dennis.
Steve Harris with Glenn Hoffman.
Jake Melanias, Uniman.
Doug Losey.
Well, welcome each and every one of you. How's that internship going for you?
It's going great.
Good. Glad to hear it. If anyone has an interest in testifying on any of the issues that you'll see on the agenda, please fill out one of the, I suppose that's purple or
lilac
forms. I really don't have a chair's report at this point in time other than the brief discussion we had earlier. So I will slide right by that and go to Bob, the executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My report will be brief. First of all, at your tables is an editorial that appeared in Saturday's Star Tribune about the Environmental Quality Board. You have probably already seen this, but just in case. And there are some were some extras for the audience. So it was a very nice editorial. So that is for your reading pleasure. Just wanted to let you know, as you probably all know, that we did receive a legislative appropriation for EQB board operations of $500,000, which is increasing the funding for EQB by about $350,000 a year. So it's $500,000 a year. So that is very welcome. It's going to increase staff's capacity to get things done that the board needs done. Also, there was an additional $500,000 a year appropriation for silica sand. And in both cases, the budgeting is going on right now, and so I don't really have too much more detail on that. The work on the budgeting is being done as we speak. And with that, I will pass.
Questions for Bob? Hearing none, Jeff. Welcome, Jeff. You're going to talk a little bit about House File 976, Article 4.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, yes, indeed. I will start out by saying we were short on some packets. We do have more packets for those in the audience who did not get one and would like one. There's more over there on the table now, the complete board packet here. Yes, I would like to summarize the legislation, at least the elements that are pertinent to the EQB. A number of you and others were at the legislature watching this particular sausage get made, and certainly feel free to step in if I make an error on what the legislation says. I'm just going to try to summarize things rather than get into levels of detail, but if any members of the board would like to fill in more detail that they think is necessary, certainly that would be great. I'm going to start out with something that came up this morning that we really didn't have the opportunity to put in the packet. Very thankful to the MPCA rulemaking staff for noting this. Part of the legislation, which I will get to, it's actually Section 105 of the new legislation talking about new rulemaking. It does say that the Environmental Quality Board shall amend its rules regarding silica sand mining, that is, the environmental review rules. Chapter 14 of Minnesota statutes, the Administrative Policies Act, says that an agency has to solicit comments from the public on any rulemaking by causing notice to be published in the State Register. And this notice must be published within 60 days of the effective date of any new legislation requiring rule amendment. In other words, this new requirement to amend our rules went into effect the day after signing, which was May 23rd or 24th. So we have to publish a notice inviting comments within 60 days of that. That means by the State Register of July 22nd, we have to put that notice in, which means we need to get the notice to the State Register by July 16th, which is the day before the July EQB meeting. So here's what we're going to do. We will put together that notice and send it to the State Register, bring it to the July 17th meeting for your approval, we hope, and then things will go along. We will not have rule language to take comments on. We will simply be issuing a notice that says we are taking comments on environmental review rules regarding silica sand mining and processing. It's essentially what it'll say, and we'll see what the public has to say. It's actually very similar to the notice that we were going to issue regarding the mandatory categories in the environmental review program, very general request for comments. So anyways, that will be on the July agenda. Just wanted to let you know that. So with that, let's get into the legislation itself. It is House File 976, otherwise known as Laws 2013, Chapter 114. A couple of sort of introductory things. Minnesota Statutes 116C, as in Charlie, is the statute that created the Environmental Quality Board. It lists out the membership, the support structure, so on and so forth. So a number of pieces of this new legislation amended Statute 116C. Some of the things regarding the structure, it actually made the Commissioner of Administration a member of the EQB, whereas it never was before, officially. Welcome.
And we'd certainly like to welcome the Commissioner.
Yes, yes, yes. We'll be sending out the introductory packet soon. No. It's kind of a catching up on things.
It also has to go through the vetting
orientation
process all over again.
Indoctrination?
Yes.
Hazing.
Hazing.
Cool song.
Right. Well, I'll leave that to the board to decide what that process will be. Section 89 of the new legislation, this is all Article 4, by the way, of and Section 89, Article 4, says that staff will be supported by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. That's something that's been going on. It's now official in statute. And also Section 90, that it shall contract with the MPCA for administrative services. That includes human resources, budgeting, payroll, so on and so forth. So before, the statute said the Office of Strategic and Long-Range Planning, which hasn't existed for quite a number of years. So now it's officially changed to reflect reality. So those with those pieces out of the way, get into a little more, direction on doing things. First of all, and I'm looking at the packet now, the pages that have the excerpts from the legislation. The first one, Section 91, amends 116C, point 99, talks about one, standards and criteria for sand mining, silica sand mining. And what it says is that by getting past the definitions, by October 1st of this year, the EQB, in consultation with local units of government, shall develop model standards and criteria for mining, processing, and transporting silica sand. You recall that one of the things that we noted in our sand report is that there's really three elements to the industry. There's the mining itself, the processing of it, and the transportation of it, all three of which have their interesting characteristics that may or may not be have their own separate potential for environmental effects. So the legislation does reflect that, those three elements of the industry. It says the model criteria and standards may be used by local units of government in developing local ordinances, and that the standards and criteria shall be different for different geographic areas of the state, that is, the karst conditions and landforms in southeast Minnesota versus the flat scoured river terraces and uniform hydrology of the Minnesota River Valley. And our standards and criteria are supposed to reflect those differences. So the that's one thing that we're going to have to do. Beyond that, it just lists the things that need to be included in those standards and criteria. I won't get into that. It's a pretty extensive list, I guess. If anybody has any questions about that, we can certainly go back to that.
One question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, do these model standards carry the weight of rule? Are they guidance? They're not statute.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, yes, that is true. They are guidance for local governments. We have to create them, but they don't hold any legal weight. People do not have to adopt them or use them. It really sort of works along with the other part of this section, the technical assistance team. You might recall that there was a pretty strong cry for help from some of the local governments around the state, that a lot of these issues are beyond our ability to deal with, whether it be resource levels that they have available to it, meaning staff resource, information resources that they have to do it, and they asked the state for help on that. That was really one of the bases why a lot of the residents were petitioning for a generic EIS. So apparently, and those of you who were there, correct me if I'm wrong, the legislature decided that a good thing to do would be to provide information and help to local governments, saying these are some possibilities for you, and, you know, essentially do with them what you will. And that's, I believe, what is the intent of this part of the legislation.
John, just by way of additional background, too. Everything from Section 91 on the handout that you have is new statutory language, so it's not an amendment to kind of existing statutory language. So these are all new sections of law. And then additionally, I would comment that the language you're seeing represents conference committee report from a bill that was a House filed and components of which came through a bill that was sponsored by Representative Rick Hansen, and then another bill from the Senate sponsored by Senator Schmidt, who then what got put together is what you see in this legislation. It's sort of a conferenced approach to a variety of things. But Mr. Smizer's right that the intention of the standards and criteria is to provide for some degree of comparability between local units of government so that they could look at the standards and criteria recommended by the state agencies through EQB and then evaluate their own approach and tailor their approach to their community and decide then what their standards and criteria, if any, were going to be. In addition to which, Mr. Smizer's right, there's a technical team of local government assistance that will be available. Again, that was a component of Representative Hansen's bill, taken sort of on a parallel path from the Wetlands Conservation Act concept of a TEP panel, technical evaluation panel, which is a component of the Wetlands Conservation Act, and sort of similar in concept, that local governments would have access to state agency personnel to inquire and get support, technical information, and these standards kind of work side by side with that.
Brian, follow up?
I guess the way I'm reading that is I guess it would make slightly more sense if it said model ordinance, because that's the language of local units of government. And assuming that this was meant to be a model ordinance for adoption by LGUs, then I would just suggest that we ensure that the language is that which is enforceable by an LGU. If we create language that involves the state as the enforcement arm, it would be difficult for an LGU to compel the state to enforce a local ordinance. So we want to just bear in mind that if this is being utilized as a model ordinance for adoption within counties for consistency, let's make sure that we use language that LGU, whether it be a county or a city, can enforce independently.
Okay, very helpful. I think that's a good suggestion. We all have to remember that a lot of things are not just done by state government agencies, that there are a lot of things out there that are being handled by the local government, including much of the approval and regulation of silica sand operations. The silica sand technical assistance team, Commissioner Stein gave you a pretty good outlining of that. There's a team that's supposed to be putting together, that's supposed to be put together with members from different agencies, University of Minnesota, and even federal agencies. What's interesting to me, anyways, about this is the subdivision 4, after it, and subdivision 3 there describes the technical team makeup, or potentially its makeup. Subdivision 4 talks about how when the technical assistance team, at the request of a local unit of government, assembles findings or makes a recommendation, the local government must consider those findings or recommendations in its approval or denial of a project. If it does not agree with the technical assistance team's findings or recommendations, the detailed reasons for the disagreement must be part of the local government unit's record of decision. In other words, if the local government asks for help, they better take it seriously, because whatever recommendations come out, they have to consider those or say why they're not. And I think that's an interesting twist on things. It means, and the reason I'm pointing this out, is it does mean that this technical team, when it is asked its advice on something, if it's going to give its advice, it can't just be a phone call. It actually has to create a document, some somewhat formal findings or recommendations on the question. So it's not just a bunch of people get together in a room, talk, and then I call up county so-and-so and say, well, this is what we think. It's going to be a more, you know, substantive deliberation and product than that. So this will be interesting and educational to work this out. I know that the different agencies are discussing how this is going to be put together, but we do need to have something together by October 1st. So the wheels are rolling. The wheels are rolling. Okay, the next one I'd like to talk about, Section 93. This also sort of goes along with this, is putting together a technical assistance ordinance and permit library. Also by October 1st, the EQB, in consultation with local government, shall create and maintain a library on local government ordinances or permits that have been approved for silica sand projects. This is intended to be for reference by other local governments. Again, similar to the model standards and criteria, ordinance language, if you will, that we need to be putting together. This will be a big part of it. I mean, you know, I'm envisioning that we will be looking at these as we are putting together our models, sort of picking and choosing which ones we think would be the most effective. Activity is occurring on this. We are in the process of putting together, creating a database that will serve the needs for this library as well as other needs, including the model standards. And also, we're thinking the same type of database put together for environmental review documents. One of the things that came out of, if you recall, the executive order work on improving the environmental review program is we don't have a library of all the EAWs and EISs that have been done. So this database is being created. Once we get this thing going, it can serve as the template for a number of different things. So we're kind of trying to handle a number of things with the same sort of planning process. My very capable partner, Kate France, is leading the work on that. We do anticipate that we will be up and running by October 1st. As to how many documents will actually be in this library by then, we will find out, but the wheels are rolling on that. The next part, Section 105, is silica sand rules. Pollution Control Agency, Department of Natural Resources, and the Department of Health are all instructed to adopt rules for within their bailiwick. Bailiwicks, plural. Letter D, paragraph D there, the Environmental Quality Board shall amend its rules for environmental review for silica sand mining and processing to take into account the increased activity in the state. It also says we have to consider, this is the one that we need to issue the notice on that I mentioned at the beginning of this. Going on in this, talks about the EQB shall consider whether the requirements of Minnesota Statutes 116C 991 should remain part of the environmental review requirements and whether the requirements should be different for different geographic areas. Okay, that leads us to the next one on the page. Again, this also is new language. It creates a new, I'll call it temporary, two-year mandatory category for environmental reviews. It gives local governments the RGU responsibility for mining. It reduces the threshold from 40 acres to 20 acres. The existing mandatory threshold for non-metallic mining is 40 acres or more to a mean depth of 10 feet during the existence of the mine. The other part is that for storage or an annual throughput, call it processing of silica sand, the PCA is the responsible governmental unit, but there's a little term in there that says, and is not any project that meets these thresholds and is not required to receive a permit from the Pollution Control Agency. I'm not going to try to explain just how that's going to work, but it is a bit confusing because if a permit is not needed, why would it be triggering an EAW? So I was not there. I'm not going to put anybody on the spot to explain that, but I think that's being noodled within the agency to figure out just how that's going to work. But the thing that is clear is that mines that are 20 acres or more, 10 feet or more deep, is a mandatory EAW for the next 2 years at least, and the local governmental unit is the responsible governmental unit for those EAWs. There are a number of things in here that are required in this new category that really aren't included in our existing EAW content requirements. One is the paragraph B1 that talks about a hydrogeologic investigation, assessing potential groundwater and surface water effects and geologic conditions. That's done to some degree now, but not necessarily. So it depends on which agency is the RGU. I would venture to say that many local governments probably don't get into that very extensively. And then paragraph 2, this is leading into the next agenda item, which is why I want to point this out. For a project with the potential to require a groundwater appropriation permit from the Commission of Natural Resources, an assessment of the water resources available for appropriation. Now, I think that when the DNR is the RGU on environmental analysis, an EAW or an EIS, DNR probably does this to whatever degree is necessary. May need some clarification on what that phrase actually means, and I think there's going to be some instruction necessary for local governments that don't do this on a regular basis. So that's coming down the line as well. But it is something that's in the legislation, and we have to address it. The next few, 3, 4, and 5, those things are really in pretty much every EAW that you're going to see. Paragraph 6, mitigation measures. Sometimes yes, sometimes no is included in EAWs, and that is something that I'm going to talk about a little bit when we get to the new EAW form. And I would note that this section, this new two-year category, takes effect July 1st. So we need to get the wheels rolling to do what we can on this one. The next section, section 94, this is the one that really sparked us into action to get the EAW form revised. And it's really about, again, the phrase an assessment of the water resources available for appropriation, the last bit of that. This is a requirement, again, that's really not included in the EAW requirements, we don't think. It's sort of alluded to. Different agencies may do it. But this is something that we need to include as a requirement. It's the same language that I read before in the previous section. And it got us thinking very seriously, we got to pick up this EAW form work again. So these different things sort of feed together. You can see that there's a trend there in the legislation that this is an important point. It needs to be dealt with and tells us to deal with it. So there are certain ways that we can deal with it. And I'll sort of go over those a little bit on the next agenda. I don't want to talk about the EAW form. With that, I guess that's all I had to say about the legislation.
For Jeff, regarding the most recent legislation.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add just one thing is that obviously there's a bunch of work that needs to be happening over the summer to get all this done by October 1st. And so Jeff's been working on this actively in terms of starting to pull together materials for both the library and the model ordinance. And as I mentioned earlier, we have funding now, and so there's budget planning going on to hire the additional staff necessary to get these tasks fully underway. They are underway now. And so I just wanted to mention that.
John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wanted to express on behalf of the, you know, agencies that were helping as the session came to a close and advising conference committee members and the governor's office on this question to acknowledge that there are a number of perspectives in the legislative session that were expressed by a wide variety and assortment of interests and ranging from citizens who took a lot of time to travel to the Capitol and have their voice be heard. Obviously, this did not the bill that ultimately is passed and is now in the statute is not what all citizens were looking for, but it did. The voice of the citizens was very helpful and constructive in putting together this language. Also wanted to acknowledge the industry representatives who organized themselves and provided a good number of perspectives for the discussion that was very helpful as well. And thanks to the association members and specific businesses that took the time and expressed their views. Lastly, I just would say that, you know, the question has come from a variety of sources of how strictly these words will be interpreted, how rigorously the agencies will view the requirements to adopt standards and to address those standards in permits and requirements. And I think that on behalf of our agency, we stand very firmly ready to implement these requirements on time. It's going to take a lot of hard work and appreciate support of a lot of the other agencies that are going to help us do that. It's going to be important that we do that with an eye toward the local units of government, because the local units of government are kind of the recipient of a lot of this information, and their decision making and their process is vital to any silica sand operating business that we'll establish in Minnesota. So we're going to be reaching out to local units of government. In fact, we're about ready to send a letter from five commissioners, with Commissioner Frederickson and others, setting up a couple of meetings in August to meet with local officials and hear their feedback and also explain the legislation, what it means to them. So this is a high priority for not only our agency, but I know a number of the other agencies are definitely keenly interested in seeing this move forward. And I would welcome citizen members of Environmental Quality Board to come to that meeting if they're available. We'll get you the notice and information as soon as we have it ready. But I just wanted to also thank the staff one more time, Jeff, for the report that was on our website. A number of people, whatever interest they represented in the discussion of this issue at the Capitol, were uniformly complimentary to EQB's report. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Comments?
Mr. Chair, I realize, you know, the session is not long over, the ink is barely dry, and yet the time is short also. In talking internally, one of the things that at DNR we feel would be really helpful is getting going just as soon as we can on what we would call the kind of the project management plan for moving us from here to there, time frames, what you're going to need and want from the agencies and the LGUs and so forth at various points along that, so we can make sure that we're plugging into that and supporting the EQB staff's work as well as we possibly can. So I don't know if you've given thoughts to, when we might be able to start to get that kind of detail down and to guide our work, but that would be something that would be very helpful.
Right. We began discussing that, sure. and so your point's well taken, and we're working on that, and we'll be sharing that as soon as we can.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Jeff?
Okay, let's move on to the next agenda item, which is related, but is at the same time a separate item, the revision of the EAW form. Sort of a little review, you might recall our last couple meetings here, both Kate France and I have been sort of doing little primers or reminders, updates on what the environmental review program is under Minnesota Rules 4410. And this really feeds into that series of things that we're trying to do at the meetings, is to make sure that even though most of the environmental review work is going on at staff level, it's a very important function of the Environmental Quality Board as an organization. It's, over the years, probably the one that is most identified with the EQB. So this sort of fits into that. Let's make sure members of the public, visitors, and everybody's thinking about what the Environmental Review Program is all about. So an EAW, Environmental Assessment Worksheet, what is it? Well, the handout that you were given has right from the definitions out of the rules, And an environmental assessment worksheet means a brief document which is designed to set out the basic facts necessary to determine whether an EIS is required for a proposed project or to initiate the scoping process for an EIS. I'll jump up above that also just to look at what is the definition of environment under the rules, because that tends to sort of be a little bit amoeba-like depending on whose perspective is being considered. The definition for the purposes of the environmental review program: environment, physical conditions existing in the area that may be affected by a proposed project. It includes land, air, water, minerals, flora, fauna, ambient noise, energy resources, and artifacts or natural features of historic, geologic, or aesthetic significance. So those are the things that environmental reviews are supposed to review. And an EAW is supposed to be a brief document that sets out basic facts on those things. And there is a form that is followed. The content on your handout again, the content of what is supposed to be covered by an EAW. This is, again, right out of the rules, 4410-1200. And if you turn that handout over on the back, again, right from the rules, it says EAW form. The EQB chair shall develop an EAW form to be used by responsible governmental units. And then the next paragraph, the EAW form shall be assessed by the EQB chair periodically and may be altered by the EQB chair to improve the effectiveness of the document. Well, that's what we're considering right now. We're considering making this form more effective. That's the purpose of the exercise that we've initiated here. It was, as I said before, catalyzed by the new legislation. But I would point out that this EAW form revision was begun back in the year 2010. There was an 18-month process, including a work team of professionals with experience with environmental review, came from state agencies, number of local governments, and consulting firms. It was nearing completion, and then the staff attrition at the EQB sort of shelved the project. You might recall that, as part of the environmental review improvement work, as part of the executive order, that among the recommendations, several of the recommendations included, mentioned, or stressed the need to pick this project up again and revise the EAW form. So then when this new House File 976 was adopted and mandates the EQB particularly to require for environmental review certain things, this was time to pick this up, dust it off, and get it rolling again. And as was so clearly and accurately stated a bit ago, time is short. We have to get some things done. For one thing, the new temporary silica sand mandatory category does require certain things. That's effective July 1st, and the EAW form does not really require those things right now. So we have to do something about that. With that, just saying there are two ways that we can require something in the EAW. One is to amend the rules, which most of you know is probably about a 12 to 18 month process. We don't really have time to do that. The other way we can require things is to amend the EAW form. We do not have to go through the complete rulemaking process to amend the form. The rules say, and in fact the statute does say also, that the form is to be created and amended by the chair. Of course, we don't want to sit in a back room with smoky cigars with Commissioner Fredrickson and amend this form without letting the whole board know. So, this is a board discussion and action. What we would like to do is basically summarize what we're doing with the draft form as it is, the revised form. See if there are particular questions or concerns today and in the next few weeks. And what we would like to do is bring back to the July meeting a form that the board can adopt. That is our plan right now. With that, I guess I would turn to the form in your packet, unless I need to stop for any questions at this point by anybody.
Questions? Nothing. No. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. What we have here in your packet is two forms. The first one is the existing form that's been used for a number of years now. At the top, it says version 8/08REV, revised, meaning back in 2008, there were several versions, and this was the revised one that was finally adopted. This has been the form that's been used since then. There is, as an aside, a special form that was created for feedlots. And is there one for mining as well? No, just for feedlots. Okay, there was one in mining that was never actually finished. So for feedlots, but for everything else, this is the form that's used. That is, what, 10 pages, 10 sheets, 5 sheets with 2 sides. And then you'll see the version June 19th, 2013. This is the draft revised form. Okay. What we're doing is a number of things with the forms. One, we've reorganized it. There was redundancy in several of the questions. Some people call them questions. Some people call them items. There were several of them that asked the same question over and over again. That was always sort of unnecessary redundancy that sort of irritated people over the years.
Isn't that redundant, unnecessary redundancy?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much. And obviously irritating somebody. Good job. Several of the items or questions have combined into like sub-items to, again, reorganize it a little better. There were several water questions before. Tell us about wetlands. Tell us about surface runoff. Tell us about sedimentation. Tell us about things like that. It got a little confusing for people, so we've now put it into one, larger water heading, and then each one of them, those particular types of things, has their own sort of subcategory under that. You'll note on the old form there are spaces left there for people to write in the answers. Well, in today's electronic age, we sort of don't need that anymore. So, we're sort of cutting it down. Everything's done, of course, with word processing applications. So we don't really need those spaces for people to write in answers. And again, clearer grouping of a number of things, try to clarify. Next thing, we're trying to clarify some of the things that should be in there, but were touched on in some of the questions, but not all of them. For example, the cumulative potential effects. As you'll note on the handout, it actually does say that cumulative potential effects are supposed to be addressed. In the content, looking at the handout that I gave you, the 4410.1200 goes through the content. Paragraph E, the last line there, does say including identification of cumulative potential effects. That was sort of hit and miss on EAWs from different places, so we've added that in pretty much every one of the questions now to make it clear that that is supposed to be addressed. Also, the question of mitigation, possible mitigation points. Looking at the handout, you will see that in 4410.1200, paragraph D, it says the EAW is supposed to include resource protection measures that have been incorporated into the project design. It's a pretty good way of saying mitigation. So it's not new, it's just not clearly consistent throughout the document as it stands. There are some of the questions what are the mitigation potentials here, and others don't. So we just sort of added that more regularly, again, to clarify that that should be in there. And we did add in item 11D, the actual phrase from the legislation. It starts the third line up from the bottom of paragraph D, including an assessment of the water resources available for appropriation. So that does now have to be in there, not just for the projects that DNR is reviewing, but for all EAWs that are done. Now, as I said in the legislation, we're going to need to sort of provide some instruction on some possibilities of how to address that requirement. One of the things that, in the best of all possible worlds, we would have the new guidance document available for you along with the adoption of the new EAW. The guidance document, there's a document called EAW Guidelines, very clever title, that is really the instruction manual. We are revising that. Much of it is being moved around, just like the different items in the EAW have been moved around. But there are some things that need to be clarified. There have been some problems with it over time. That guidance document has not been updated to reflect some of the changes in the rules over the years. I think the guidance document was last printed in 2005, so that definitely needs some updating anyways. We are planning to have that guidance document finished in August. It's well underway. It's going to take a little bit longer than the form. But doing what we can do as soon as possible. We have found that many of the RGUs read the form. They don't read the instruction manual. So one of the things we actually spend a lot of time on is talking over the phone and trading emails with people putting together EAWs on how to do things. So I think it will be a bit of an inconvenience, not a huge inconvenience, to have this little bit of lag time. But it's the best that's going to be possible. So we'll get done what we can get done as soon as we can get it done, and the guidance will follow very shortly thereafter. So with that, certainly take comments, questions on things. Again, we're not asking for any approval today. We are hoping that today and in the next few weeks we will get from the different agencies their views on things, on what they would like to have added, changed, what's not working, what they think would work better. We would like to get this on the July agenda for approval. It's not absolutely necessary, but to try to make the requirements of the legislation, we'd like to get this going.
Questions, comments? Robert?
Bob? Mr. Chair, members, I just wanted to add, even in his battered condition this morning, Commissioner Fredrickson asked a wonderful question, which was, well, what's the point of all this in terms of, it's just a form. What's the point of redoing this form? And this is one of these mundane sounding things that actually I think is really important, which is the form needs to ask the questions in a way that that elicit good responses. So information, the information that an RGU really needs to make a decision on whether to require an EIS or what mitigation measures are proper. That's what the form's designed to do. And we really, this was actually about a year and a half project, I think, with an interagency team. A lot of work went into it to try to really hone in on that and make sure that this form gets the RGUs the information that they need to make these very important decisions. So just wanted to add that. That's it.
Other questions? Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, I can appreciate the desire not to amend 4100 and to utilize the EAW form to accomplish the goals that the legislature set forth in statute. A concern I would have is that this EAW form is used hundreds of times a year. Thousands? I don't know what the actual number is, but
dozens, surely.
It's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
And by inserting the desires, by inserting the questions that the legislature requires to get on the table for silica sand mining. It requires almost, well, it requires all of the other EISs to go down that path, as, or EAWs to go down that path as well. And what I'm concerned about is that in an effort to incorporate all of the concerns we have with silica sand mining into this single document, we're going to penalize all of the other users of this form to the extent that they may not even be able to get the EAW completed. Now, having said that, you have to remember that I'm handicapped by not having the guidance document alongside it. So when I look at a question, I can't see the guidance that tells me whether or not an LGU who's building a one-mile bicycle trail needs to explain all of the geology underlying that geology, the that bicycle trail for a mile. That would essentially eliminate the bicycle trail. The LGU could never come up with the funds to determine that, whereas a silica sand mine probably is doing borings to determine the geology for their project. Now, I notice in the form, I guess it's on the bottom of page 3, that there is a statement for silica sand projects, such and such as a requirement. And what I'm wondering is whether we can be more specific to some of these requirements for silica sand mining. For example, the geology, you know, I'm looking at section 10 right now, describe the geology underlying a project. I would say that's a very onerous description if you're looking at adding onto a bicycle trail. And a bicycle trail is a mandatory EAW because of the length of the project, not because it's any particular bad project. Or, for example, groundwater, evaluating the aquifers. I know the DNR is working on mapping aquifers in the state, but at this point in time, many LGUs or individuals who are undertaking a minor project that happens to fall within the EAW guidelines would find that very onerous. And then finally, one other item under land use, it says existing land use of the site, adjacent areas, and areas near the site. I'm not sure what near the site means. If I look at a plat book, a section of land is near another section of land, but those are miles worth of land. So it would be more helpful to be a little more descriptive in that. And I guess I'll just encapsulate my concerns with the statement that I understand what we're trying to get on the table when it comes to permitting or evaluating a silica sand project. But if we up the document for that specific project, that creates an onerous document for the other, you know, 99 or 999 times it's used a year, whatever that number happens to be. I don't know the number of EAWs we do. But having been through the EAW process for a trail system, this would become very, very difficult to get a beneficial, publicly desirable project on the ground, because it would require us to do things that we wouldn't have the financial resources to do, because we're not looking at profiting off of a venture. We're looking at putting a piece of public infrastructure on the ground.
Mr. Chair, if I may. I wanted to make 2 points. I appreciate your concerns, Commissioner Knapstad. There are two points. One is that the only parts having to do with the silica sand that were added to this form that are the ones having to do with groundwater. And so it's very, very limited pieces of this. The rest of the form was the result of the discussions that I referred to in terms of the interagency team. I think and it's difficult to compare these two forms because in terms of like a strikeout underline, because there was so much reorganization that really wasn't possible to do that. Jeff and I talked this morning actually, and Jeff was suggesting that of putting together a side by side that would take like elements and compare them. And that may be helpful. I think if you do that, you will find, and if you kind of go flip back and forth between, you'll find that much of the language that was in the old form is still in the new form. I don't think there's any, I may be wrong on this, but I don't think there's any substantive change between what was required before and what's required now. I believe what the form at least is intending to do is make more clear what has always been an expectation of EAWs. One of the things that the form does, for example, fairly consistently is it follows a format. I think this was Randall Donin's suggestion. I'm gonna pin it on Randall here, which was great. I think it really works well. Is a structure of describe the resource, discuss what the impacts to that resource will be, and identify mitigating measures. If you look through the way this is structured, just about everything is in that frame of mind, or in that format, and which makes a lot of sense. You want to know what's there, you want to know what the impacts of your project are going to be on that resource, or vice versa, and you want to know if there are impacts that are important or even significant. What are the measures that are going to be taken to mitigate those? So I think it really, from an RGU standpoint and from a project proposer standpoint, it should provide a lot more clarity on what's wanted, which should, I think, make things easier for, actually, rather than harder for EAWs. As to your concern about a trail, for example, I think in any of these instances, and maybe we just need to make this more clear, if that geological question, for example, you know, sinkholes, shallow limestone formations, a lot of this information is able to be gleaned from geologic atlases and so forth. It's information that's very readily available. And if a question is not applicable, that would be the appropriate answer in an EAW. So I really don't think, I understand your concern, I really don't think once you take a hard look at this form that it really adds any substantive requirements that weren't there before. So,
Peggy? Or did you have a follow-up?
Well, Brian? Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I would examine a couple areas of this form and have somewhat of a disagreement. Section 10, for example, cover type. The former form used to require you to estimate the following cover types: wetlands, wooded forest, brush, cropland, lawn, impervious surfaces, stormwater, and to replace that with describing the geology underlying the project, to me seems to be a conversion of a line of thinking that it clearly wants to understand the subsurface geology, what's below the ground. This is a change of mindset of not what's on the ground that has the potential to be disturbed, but what's below the surface, because now we're talking geology and aquifers. So I'm not opposed to asking those questions. I'm simply pointing out that, as was stated lower in the form where it said for silica sand projects, these things need to be considered. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that I'm okay with asking for surface cover, but if you want to know, have an impact that, or you want to know what's below the surface, then it would be more relevant to restrict that line of questioning to projects that are intended to go below the surface.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, clarification on something. Remember I said we moved things around. Okay. The old form, number 10, is cover types. On the new form, cover types are number 7. On the old form, geologic hazards and soil conditions is number 19. On the new form, geology, soils, and topography, landforms, is number 10. The old form, number 19, the geologic question, has been slightly revised for clarification in number 10 on the new form, but it's almost the same language. So it's really not requiring something new that wasn't required before. It's just under a different question. So be careful looking from number to number. That's not really the good comparison. You got to sort of look at the titles of the different things. The old form on the number, question 10 and the old form cover types, we moved that up because that's more of a descriptive thing rather than an analytical thing. And so we moved it up right after the project description number, basically starting out with the facts that you can just lay out there before you do any analysis, and then following up with the analytical issues. So if you compare the old number 19 with the new number 10, you'll see they're very, very similar.
Peggy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick questions. One, I know that the Health Department had a few additional suggestions, and you're still allowing us to provide input and feedback for you on that.
Most assuredly. Okay. I'm asking for more input
and
feedback.
All right, well, we will give
you bet.
Then the second one is you talked about the rural project, and I guess I'm wondering whether you see the change to the form as sort of the short term and that you are still thinking long term you would be doing rule changes, or is this really intended to be the solution to that problem?
Oh, Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is definitely short term. This is the low-hanging fruit.
Okay.
These are the things that this is the thing. I mean, the legislation, as Bob said, the additions from the legislation really are the statement on for silica sand projects underwater and wetlands, number 11, and then under 11, under 11A, I should say, and then under 11D, we added the phrase including an assessment of water resources available for appropriation, which of course is only only appropriate if you're going to appropriate water, which probably is redundant also.
Unnecessarily redundant.
Unnecessarily redundant, yes, exactly. Yes, exactly so. So there aren't too many things that we've added, but the things that we've added, we believe, need to be added. And again, catalyzed by the new legislation. But this by no means satisfies all the requirements of the new legislation. We will have to undergo rulemaking, which is why we'll have to have the notice asking for comments, and that's going to take a while. Bear in mind that the two-year mandatory category, as we're calling it, for silica sand projects is only good for 2 years. And part of the legislation says we have to revise our rules and consider if the requirements under that should be made permanent. So that'll have to happen as a regular rulemaking process. Yeah.
Thank you,
Commissioner Stein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I like that we're talking about doing something fast. So this is in spite of concerns that I know preparers of EAWs might have that we're changing something. Sometimes I worry that we're worried about changing something. Let's move fast. I like that. So I would say, though, that two things. On the silica sand requirements, it doesn't appear that the rules would preclude the chair from providing a supplemental set of questions for silica sand projects. And so you could simply leave the EAW form as it was sort of drafted by the team that worked on this and sort of release that and have a supplemental form that applies strictly to silica sand projects and make that known to project proponents and responsible governmental units. The second thing that I thought we should consider discussing, since moving fast is good, but moving without your local governmental units that are responsible for the vast majority of the EAWs that are prepared could be hazardous. We might want to reach out to the responsible governmental units and give them one sort of notification that we're about ready to do this. And you should now stand up and take notice and remind them of the work that was done previously, but also give them a window of time to at least voice any support or concern over the form. So that that ability to reach out to the responsible governmental units that are in local governments, I think, would be one last step that would probably, as often said in the legislature, give people some comfort around the fact that we're changing it. But so, I really don't want to slow down it very much, if at all.
And that, I guess, goes to the heart of the question that in my battered state asked this morning. Are we just moving the numbers? Are we just changing the amount of numbers we have on the document? Or does this actually fit with the governor's philosophy of a better government for a better Minnesota? And the response was, yes, we think it does. It expedites, but it also makes it much more manageable.
Yes. Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think that is the point. And as to Commissioner Stein's idea of notice, I think that is a good idea and good practice. Depending on how much notice we want to give, that may make it tough for the form to be absolutely final by the next board meeting. It might be more final. Of course, the board doesn't necessarily need to adopt the form. It's adopted. It's signed by the chair. So there may be some tinkering after that. So we'll see how it works out. We'll put it on a calendar and see how it works out. Sure. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions, kind of to Commissioner Napstead's point. The definition of proximity. I'm just looking at underwater and wetlands. A, describe water features on or in close proximity to the site, and it's kind of it can be a subjective term, and maybe the answer is in the guidance document, each of these surface water items are identified and there's a buffer that's defined. I just see, from what I understand, a lot of times this gets caught up in providing information to the review agency and gets kicked back. And when, you know, the reviewer and proposer, provider, whatever, aren't on the same page, that can kind of get tripped up there. So I think the lower number of places in here where there's room for people to kind of define it themselves, I think the better.
Good point. Other comments?
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that perhaps a path forward would be for a very quick turnaround review by agencies and board members, so that we put our best foot forward when we do solicit some input from the LGUs, that we have a good sense that this is where we want to be. And given that this has been on the shelf for a bit, probably just refreshing that with the agencies first would be a good idea. And then, Bob, I think you alluded to this, some kind of translator for folks, whether it's a side-by-side or, you know, in the new version, referencing them to the relevant old section of the, you know, the 08 form, to precisely avoid, you know, everybody having to do that translation piece themselves. And I think it'll get traction with people faster.
I like Commissioner Stein's comments regarding getting some feedback to those that actually, I mean, in a sort of ad hoc, a field test, if you will, where someone could actually, that has done EAWs in the past, could actually sit down and go through this new revised form and say, what do you think? Is it better? Does it work better?
Right.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. I failed to invite Joanna Ruprecht up, and I am going to correct that right now, Joanna, to talk about. I should have invited you up prior to this discussion, but we're still on the agenda anyway. So,
right. Mr. Chair, members of the board, just one thing. There is one thing I'd like to say about this form process.
Oh, all right.
On this.
So I jumped the gun?
Perhaps.
Okay.
Perhaps. But it's your gun to jump.
Yeah. I'm in a battered state, so you go ahead.
Okay, okay.
Let's not play that.
Guns and battering.
I would suggest this. We are going to have to do a formal rulemaking process in the next couple of years. I mean, that's a given. We do need to do something to meet, you know, the new requirements for environmental assessment worksheets from the legislation. The sending something out to anybody for comment is not a quick process. You know, it's always a couple months. I mean, it's just basically a given, okay? If we are going to send out, you know, a draft form to local governments and say, what do you think, that's going to put us into August before we can really do anything with what we get back. And certainly the board can choose to do that, but I would just note that it's going to cause some confusion on what's required, who's doing what, things like that. The sort of time rush that we're in was because the legislature told us to do some things. Also, the form process revision, yeah, it's been sitting there for a while, but it got vetted by a lot of people in different agencies, and a number of the board members were different, number of the agency representatives were different, but that doesn't mean that their work, you know, should be discounted, I don't think. So I guess is what I'm going to suggest, ask that we keep going ahead with this and plan to, as part of the rule revision in the foreseeable future, include EAW form revision questions for the general public along with comments on the rule revisions, just because trying to keep things rolling, get done what we can when we can get it done. I will certainly, we will put together a table of the different items and topics saying, current form, here's where they are. New form, here they are. And you'll be able to see that it's pretty much the same. The concern about let's not require something for this type of project that doesn't make any sense with this one, yes, I agree with that 100%. And I want to make people comfortable that that's not what we're doing. So in the interest of keeping things rolling, and again, it's up to you, but this is my suggestion, we keep going with the form, get your comments back, agency comments back to us as soon as possible. Aim for July to adopt a new form and let everybody know that we're going to really, you know, put the whole thing out along with the silica sand, rule revision, and things like that in the next couple of years. That would be my suggestion on this. Just trying to meet some deadlines and get some things done and prove to the world that we can actually accomplish something when we put our minds to it.
Message received.
So if you're comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I just offer, I think we need to have an offline discussion about how to do this. I think there are some alternatives, so let's not reserve judgment at this point.
Okay. That's fine. Bear in mind, the clock's ticking. That's all.
Mr. Chair, just John, I'd make the point that it's your discretion here.
Yes.
Right. So as long as you consult with whomever you believe you need to consult with to make the final decision, I'm comfortable.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Joanna, again, my apologies for not slotting you in right following that, but I did not. And Joanna is here on behalf of Land Stewardship Project.
Yep, that's right. Good
Welcome.
Afternoon, commissioners. I am Johanna Ruprecht. I live in Winona County, and I work for the Land Stewardship Project. And as some of you know, our organization worked extensively on the frag sand issue at this past legislative session. I wanted to comment just briefly on the provision in HF 976 for the EQB to develop model standards and criteria, which you talked about a little while ago. This is actually not something that we worked for. It's really not something that local grassroots groups were working on this issue were asking for, and it's not something that we saw local governments asking for either, really. What local governments and a lot of local citizens were asking for was a much stronger state role in looking at this issue as a regional issue and protecting citizens. But this is part of what passed, so I just wanted to make a few brief comments on it today. Wanted to point out that there's really not going to be any such thing as one model that will work for everyone everywhere, as ordinances need to be designed for each community based on what that community wants. Ordinances come out of what a community values, and different communities are going to come to different conclusions based on their different values on whether this industry is right for them, whether it has any value for them. There are some communities that would like to ban the frac sand industry. There are some that would like to allow it in a very, very limited manner. And there are some that are going to want to allow it more broadly, using, for instance, the conditional use permit process. So I think what would be helpful for communities would be a spectrum of models to fit each of those potential situations. There is some language in the statute that mentions that geographical diversity needs to be taken into account, and that's helpful and that's important, but that's not sufficient, really, in terms of the diversity of community views on this issue. There also needs to be recognition that not every community wants to arrive at the same endpoint with regard to the frac sand industry. So again, creating a range of models for a range of outcomes, from not allowing the industry to allowing it with extremely strict limits to allowing it with broader limits, that's what would be most helpful. I hope that's how the EQB will consider approaching this rather than a one-size-fits-all kind of approach. And I wanted to add also that for the work of the technical assistance team that will be developed, it will also be very important not to have a one-size-fits-all mindset in the advice that they may end up giving to local governments as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions for Joanna? If not, again, thank you very much for taking the time to be here. Kristen, are you prepared? Kristen Ide Tollefson. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just wanted to also comment that the local governments and citizens groups and things are very well organized and have been networking down in Southeast and are already taking advantage of the allowance in the new legislation to extend moratoriums to try to get a grasp on this. I certainly agree with Johanna's comments. And I would like to say that if there's any, I think that if there's an interest on the part of staff, EQB, to, you know, put together a group of RGUs, or that would be a pretty easy thing for people to help with because we've been so well organized. And I'm sure you can, you know, inquire at any point, but any of us are quite well acquainted with who's been on board, as you know, and you've met. So in any way that the citizen groups and all of your constituents on this matter can be helpful in putting that together quickly, really, we also want to see it move quickly, and that's great. I would also like to remind you that one of the things that's happening at the local level is the responsibility is being shifted down really to the most local level because of some of the differences in the values and in the responsibilities of the county and township governments and city governments. And I would ask you not to forget that many townships are now having to make their own ordinances because of the value differences that Johanna is talking about. So when you're thinking in terms of RGUs, please include cities and townships because we are bearing a lot of responsibility. Sometimes we're being left with responsibility by our counties. So I think that the work that you're doing, particularly if you can work with a group of RGUs, representative group of RGUs that includes those three levels, that will enormously help us at the local level to coordinate some of our own thoughts and actions. So I want to thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. Questions, comments? Thank you, Kristen.
Mr. Chair, just one quick comment. The outreach we will do to local units of government we will be including counties, cities, and township officials. So thank you for your comment.
Let's move then to Fillmore, Houston, Winona, Silica, Sand Facilities, EIS update. Jeff?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I just want to give an update of where we are on that particular project. We did meet with the project proposer, that is Minnesota Sands and his consultant, when was it? A couple weeks ago, not quite a couple weeks ago. an interesting situation. Their, for lack of a better term, corporate structure, quote unquote, is evolving. And along with that evolution is their consideration of just what are they going to be doing, which means what exactly is the project that needs to be scoped for the EIS is also rather amorphous right now. Somebody asked me, do you think that they're just trying to get out of having things analyzed? I didn't get that impression. And, you know, we know darn well that there are potential projects out there, and part of the scoping would be to determine, you know, which ones are realistic and which ones need to be analyzed. So I don't think it's a dodge. I think it's really a matter of investment funding, who's in, what's the scope of what they're going to be doing, how big is their reach, how big is their potential for reach when it comes to both geographic reach and actual types of projects. So it's a quite a conundrum to try to figure out, okay, what is it that we're going to get our arms around to try to analyze here? That seems to be sort of a shifting thing. And of course, that would be the basis for estimating the cost of the scoping process. And you can't really get started on the scoping process until you have a check from the project proposer that will pay for the scoping process. So there's all these, I sort of see it as this, you know, algorithm with a lot of variables. And until we can plug a solid value into one of those variables, everybody's sort of scratching their head. They're not pressuring us to, I mean, they're not saying you're holding us up. We're not saying they're holding you up. It really is a sort of confusing situation. So we are noodling on both our ends, and we have to get in touch with each other pretty quickly again to say, do you have any idea of what we should do? So there have been some ideas on, okay, let's have like some potential projects, scopes that would be analyzed. There's been the thought, gee, do we just pull all their permit applications and the project goes away? That's certainly a possibility, but we can't force them to do that. So it's an interesting and somewhat challenging situation. So that's where it stood, and we're trying to figure out just where to meet on that one.
Mr. Chair.
John.
Just would consider asking the board's attorney if this conversation is time limited at all. I'm always a little, I'm on the receiving end of that question most of the time. I'd like to be on the asking end of it this time.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Other comments? Seeing none, thank you, Jeff. Tomorrow, the Governor's Institute on Community Design will hold its second meeting. Ellen, welcome.
Thank you very much. And I will be very brief. I don't have a lot to say about this, except to, number one, remind you to be there tomorrow, 11:30 to 3:30, back at the Veterans Service Building. It should be another, hopefully, very productive meeting. And also, please read the report or the recommendations that came from the Governor's Institute, which we emailed to you a couple days ago. So if you don't have, it looks like this. And it has an appendix. It's not very long. So that would be really helpful to have read that. And then I just wanted to point out.
It's 18 pages, right?
It's 18 pages, I think, yeah. There's been a lot of reference to two reports that I just wanted to mention to see if people have questions about those. Or one is the water governance report, and that's been mentioned, and it's an important background document. If you haven't seen it yet and you have time, I would really encourage you to read that tonight or at least glance at it. This is the two-page version. It's like 70-some pages long, and it's online at the PCA. And I can just when I get back to my office right after this, I can just resend the link to that to everybody, because that'll be part of the topic of conversation related to water management. And the other piece that I wanted to mention is MCAG. You've heard that mentioned a lot in the context of climate change, and that's the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. And just so you know, it's big. So I'm not going to send you this, although I could send out the executive summary, which is 20-some pages. If anybody is still planning to do homework tonight, those would be two useful documents to look at. So I guess I'm just seeing some nodded heads. So I'll just send out those two links when I get back today in case anyone has time. And then the last thing I wanted to say, as far as the report, I think I mentioned that we'll hand that out. That'll be available tomorrow to anyone who attends the meeting. The recommendations from GICD. I did have the opportunity to talk to several commissioners as we made sure that these recommendations, you know, tweaked them to make sure that they were accurate, et cetera. So I've talked to some of you, but certainly not all of you. So happy to take any questions. That's really all I wanted to say today. And Tina Smith will be joining us in during the day.
I think of the 9 recommendations, we could probably devote at least a half a day to each of them in terms of discussion. So,
or more.
With exception of putting the Met Council on the Environmental Quality Board, that seems to be fairly simple. The rest, absolutely. So hopefully all have that are able to attend will have a chance to have gone through those briefly. Be prepared to engage. Do you have the agenda with you for
tomorrow?
I do. Just give us a quick walkthrough of that?
Sure. And we did have to, first we're going to start at 11:30, as I said, with welcome and introductions. We did have Tina Smith scheduled for that time slot, but she's going to move her time that she's able to come to 2:15. So Bill Fulton will still be doing the facilitating, so he'll be there for that. At 11:45 to 12:30, we'll have lunch prepared and available, because I know a lot of you will be at other meetings before this. It'll be a working lunch, so while you eat, the Governor's Institute staff, Governor Glenn Denning, and others will summarize the recommendations that they've made in the report. After that, and that's a 45-minute schedule for that. It is a lot to cover. And then after that, for almost 2 hours, we'll have time for workshop participants, that's all of you, to have an in-depth discussion of the GICD's recommendations and to talk about specific policy and programmatic changes the EQB could pursue. There'll be a short break. We'll have Tina Smith come in right at the end of that discussion and give some comments. At 2:30, we think we're going to have a visit from Senator Marty and possibly Representative Hortman, just very briefly. They were interested in just checking in and saying hello, connecting with the EQB to say that if you are choose to work on some comprehensive climate issues and water issues, please know that they're very interested in collaborating, and that work that goes forward would be even more productive if it's done in coordination, not just within the administration, but with the legislature as well. So I think that's the message that you'll hear from Senator Marty. Now he doesn't have to come. I basically think that's what he's going to say. but hopefully I'm sure he'll add a lot more than that. And then finally, time for discussion and outlining a path forward and hopefully coming up talking about implementation ideas. It is a lot to cover in four hours will go pretty quickly. In the appendix, you'll see that there's some description of some of the best practices from other states that they are bringing to your attention for consideration as examples or models. And I'm sure there'll be some discussion of that as well.
Any questions for Ellen?
How long do we have the room, Anna, if we... Just till 4. Till 4, okay. Yeah. So that's the plan.
Other comments? Anyone in the audience that wishes to make comments? Seeing none, I believe we're at the end of our agenda, and at record time, hour and a half. So... With being no further business, a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Move.
There is. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, one and all.